Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction or fantasy book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to and hopefully enjoy. Joining me today, like normal, is Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And we're going to get straight into today's episode.
Okay, let's go.
No what news, no nothing. Well, okay, well, it's a Silmarillion, as people will know if they've seen the podcast title or podcast art. And this is a book.
You still need to say the author. I know it's clear.
No. I will get on to who the author is. Oh. So in this first edition here, on the Wikipedia page, this at the top here, it just says The Silmarillion, Tolkien. So let's just say Tolkien.
Tolkien. Okay.
Tolkien is a book. This is a book by Tolkien, is right. The Silmarillion.
Which is a second name.
It is a family name, say it that way. Oh, but I think that's a really good idea when you publish a book in 1977 and it just says Tolkien on it.
Yeah.
For reasons I'll get to in a minute.
Okay.
The Silmarillion. It's the backstory, it's the prequel, it's whatever you want. All these different things in your head of when you say the Silmarillion. What is in your head when you say that? Go.
Explanation about world building.
An explanation about world. Okay, so yes, it is the world building. So here's the thing: I've never been interested in reading the notes that this is how it's always been framed in my brain. J.R. Tolkien wrote The Hobbit, wrote The Lord of the Rings, and he also had lots of other notes and backstory and myths and world building stuff.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
I even read that he called it his stuff. His stuff about Middle Earth, his stuff about the rings, his stuff about the Numenor, whatever it is.
Okay.
The stuff about, what's this other stuff? And it's true, because in this book, they include a letter that he wrote to an editor kind of saying, oh, this is this stuff. You know, I've got this stuff here. What shall I do with this stuff? And the editor's like, I don't want the stuff. I want a follow-up to The Hobbit. And he's like, yeah, but I've got all this stuff. So what is the stuff? And it's really funny that J.R.R. Tolkien wasn't even quite sure what the stuff was.
Yeah.
And I never had any intention of reading stuff by an author, which is like the background of books, which are the actual books that I've read.
Yeah.
And I've read The Hobbit a number of times.
Yeah.
I read through The Lord of the Rings once when I was, 14, 15. I remember which house, which bedroom I was in. So I kind of got like that.
Okay.
I kind of got that age range. So it was in a bedroom that I was in the house in Middleton Teasdale. And we moved out of there in like 96 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking 1994 to 1995.
Okay.
13, 14, 15 years old was when I read through The Lord of the Rings.
Quite a long time ago, and you were a very different person.
A very different person, but yeah. I read through The Lord of the Rings, and I always remember it, and I kind of remember the structure and things like that. Then, about 5-6 years later, the movies came out, and I watched the movies, but now those movies are 20 to 25 years old.
Yes, they are.
And we rewatched the movies, or you watched them for the first time. We went through...
We
did this before Christmas, and I said to people, hey... And we forgot to... Because normally when we've done these, movie episodes, we've kind of watched the first movie, recorded 15, 20 minutes, watched the next movie, recorded another bit, watched the next movie, recorded... And we just didn't do that. And at the end, we were like, I had to go away to an emergency gig at Christmas or New Year's or whatever it was. And I got back and then it kind of fell through. And I said on the podcast, hey, if anyone wants me to do a podcast about if you want us to actually record a podcast about the extended edition Lord of the Rings Peter Jackson movie trilogy marathon that we did.
Yes.
Send me a message. Emails. I said, if we get 10 messages for people asking for that, we'll do an episode about it.
How many did we get?
We got 4.
All right.
That's kind of I don't know how many people listen to this podcast. I'm guessing a few hundred people listen to this podcast. Again, I've not checked the numbers since literally 2009, 2010 was the last time I checked the numbers on this podcast. And it used to get like 400 downloads per episode back then.
Okay.
So if the podcast, we've just kept on doing the same thing for the last 15 years on this podcast, and if other people have just kept on listening at the same rate 15 years later, we've still probably got a few hundred people listening to this podcast.
Okay.
Is what I'm guessing.
For me, that still feels really a lot of people.
It is a lot of people. people care about our opinions about books and stuff like that.
So
here's the thing. I was like, well, for just 4 people. I asked for 10 people. 4 people said they wanted a podcast about the Lord of the Rings movies. but I realized I could wrap up most of what I wanted to say. Of course, I always say this. I wrap up most of what I want to say about the movies in maybe 20, 30 minutes, even though we talked about it quite a bit. Yes. I was like, well, I'm not really sure how much more I have to say about that. So,
yeah.
But then I still had The Lord of the Rings stuck in the back of my head.
Okay. The book.
Just The Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Because last year, one of the reasons I wanted to do this, watch through this marathon of Lord of the Rings movies with you, is that that was what they did on another podcast called the Cortex Podcast. Mm. And it was one of their like membership perks where they would watch the watch the Lord of the Rings extended editions and then do a whole podcast about each, you know, a whole episode about each movie.
Yes.
And if you don't know the Cortex Podcast, one of the hosts of that is CGP Grey, who has done like he does lots of YouTube. He's a YouTuber. He does these YouTube fast talky educational stuff. And some of the videos that he's done is about Lord of the Rings. Some of the most I don't know, popular? I don't know. Sort of like 10 years ago, he made some Lord of the Rings explainer videos. Like, you know, who are the things? What are the what's-its? You know, that kind of stuff.
Yes.
So yeah, that's obviously a big part of his life. Mike, the other host, had never watched them before, never read the books. And so for him, it was like a new experience.
Okay,
really.
Okay.
Watching the movies.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, Juliana is also in this position of not having watched all the way through all the movies.
Yeah. My experience with the movies was mostly, I watched the first movie.
Yeah.
The second movie I've only ever seen on a tiny, tiny screen in a bus.
Yeah, it was part of a bus
going
trip.
Going on like a bus trip with the choir. Yeah. And then the third movie, I don't think I've ever watched.
But I had
watched
all of the extended editions while on a cruise. And I'd watched all the way through all of the extended editions.
Yes.
And this was back when internet, there was no like Starlink and satellite internet easy access.
So you had to get the DVD.
Yeah, so you go down to the DVD library on the cruise ship and get out the Lord of the Rings extended edition. Yeah. And I'd watch through all of the Lord of the Rings extended editions, some of them, the first movie at least three times, because I also watched it with two different director's commentaries. There was a director's commentary and then another commentary, a writer's commentary or whatever it was.
Yeah, and I think the actors also have
a commentary. Yeah, and then there's an actor's commentary. So all of the movies have those kind of things. And I watched through those as well. I watched all of the making of parts of the DVD, the extended edition DVD. And you kind of get immersed in that. And I remember having that experience and then listening to this Cortex podcast about them also doing that. I also wanted you to have that experience of watching through all the movies and then watching through all of the making of stuff and the behind the scenes stuff.
And that's kind of what I did. We watched the movies together.
Yeah.
You then went on a gig. And while you were on the gig, I watched all the extra footage.
Yeah, all the making of.
All the movies, all the things that were available there, which is comes together quite like
quite a lot.
Huge. It's a big chunk of entertainment by then. Yeah.
So anyway, all of this was stuck in my head. Mm-hmm. And there you go. We just did the bit about the watching the movies. Either way. So, but what it came down to is like, right, let's just get into this. I've not read The Lord of the Rings since I was 15 years old, say.
Yeah.
14, 15. And this year I'm going to be 24, 25. Sorry, not no.
What?
It's gonna be. Let me put it this way. It's gonna be 30 years later. I was gonna say one thing and then I switched to another thing and then I switched back and I got mixed up. So here we go. So 44, 45. So it's gonna be 13 years later. 30 years later. I can
You're
say
really
it.
Good with your numbers
I'm
today.
I'm really bad. I should have written these down. I didn't write any notes down about this stuff. And I was like, well, let's reread Lord of the Rings, and because I've just rewatched the movies. So I've seen the movies three times.
Yes.
And I wanted my experience of Lord of the Rings to be more grounded in the books again rather than in the movies. Because I realized the first time I watched the movies, when I watched them in the cinema, I remember going to the cinema.
Yeah.
I went to the last one with my parents, I think, as well, like that. So it was a fun, you know, experience. But all the way through, at the first watching of the movies, I have the book in my head because that's something I'd read 5 years earlier, and it was clearer in my brain, and I could remember, like, oh, wait a second, what's the spider's meant to be happening at this point, and then it happens halfway through this next, and I was like, no, the spider, anyway, doesn't matter. You have all those different things when you're sort of like, the book is the like version that's in your head, and then you watch the movies. But this time around, I was like, oh, the version of Lord of the Rings in my head when I was watching the movies this time at Christmas last year was was the movies.
Yeah.
You know, and
because
the
book
scenes.
Been so much longer ago that's not fresh in
and
your head.
And since then, I have had other experiences, like I went to see an orchestra perform the music from Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a fun thing that I did again. That would have been in 2007, I guess, or 6 or 7, like that. So it's still a long time ago. And, you know, you see all the YouTube videos now about Lord of the Rings movies and the books and the stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, what I want to do is once again now have the books in my head as the main version of Lord of the Rings. I wouldn't say rather than the movies, but I kind of wanted to have, you know, I wanted to balance it out again.
Yeah,
if you know
like a little
mean.
Bit of brain formatting.
Yeah.
Like you want to have override
this
a bit.
This is not like, I mean, now all I'm doing now is kind of rationalizing why I wanted to read Lord of the Rings again. Yeah. Mostly, I just wanted to read them again. And this is kind of an interesting like experiment on my brain and memory of like, how much now am I going to remember from the book that I read 30 years ago? Yeah. And how much is going to be from the movie that I watched 3 months ago?
Yes.
And so I started Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
And the start of the Lord of the Rings is like this, you know, notes on the hobbits, you know, once you actually get into the Tolkien stuff rather than like the forwards and the, you know, the bits by other people writing, you know, about it. And it's all about the hobbits. And then it's sort of like, oh, yes, and this. And then the book starts talking about a collection of books and letters and myths and writings, which is the source material for this book.
Yes.
And it becomes very, very clear right away that Tolkien imagined the books that he was written as artifacts in the world of Middle Earth.
Yeah.
In other words, like when you actually read the text of The Hobbit there and back again, it's sort of like, yeah, this is a book by Bilbo Baggins, you know. And then you even see it in the movie as well. I'm not going to talk about the movies too much in this episode, but you actually get that moment where you see Frodo finishing off the book Lord of the Rings. And in this, and that is right from the Lord of the Rings novel, like the start of the Fellowship of the Rings.
So it starts very meta. As you,
yes, it is very meta.
There's an author writing a story about a person writing a story.
Yeah, yeah. But also, the book itself, by the text of the book, it's kind of acknowledged that this is an edited work.
Okay.
That this is like, oh, we took some source from here, some source from there. Somebody wrote this, we're not quite sure. And then now it's all been collected together from, you know, something was written by Frodo. Some of it was written by Bilbo. Some of it was, you know, some notes of the genealogies that Samwise put together, you know.
Yeah.
And also it talks about this huge collection of documents that were in Rivendell that were collected together that Bilbo himself had been editing together into a greater work and sort of like, and now this is a collection and it's been added to since then, but before then this was it. And I was like, oh, he's talking about his stuff.
Yes,
he's talking
Tolkien
in the Lord of the Rings is acknowledging that this is just one work, and also Bilbo or Frodo or somebody at the time of you know, in the after events of Lord of the Rings or at that time has edited together a whole collection of stuff, of myths and legends and records and genealogies and all of these other things into a work. Well, not into a work, but there is a collection of this stuff, and what you're reading now, or what you're going to be reading now, is that's all the source material for what you're going to read now, and this has been translated into the more modern tongues, into the tongues of men, from the tongues of elves and all that kind of stuff, and that's what you're going to get. And then the book starts, the real, like the Lord of the Rings starts, and you have like, you know, Bilbo adopting Frodo and having a birthday party and disappearing and you're like, oh right, that's the stuff. And I was like, but this stuff that they're talking about here. And I was like, that exists. That's what the Silmarillion is. And I didn't clock this because the first time I read this, I was 14 years old and it was 30 years ago.
You probably just read like through it and didn't think of it.
Yeah, and when I read The Lord of the Rings the first time, I'd read The Hobbit, but I didn't even know the Silmarillion existed.
Yeah.
You know.
Makes sense.
And so this time, when I was actually, I realized I'm going to have to read The Silmarillion. So I read, I listened to the audio. This time I'm listening to the audiobook, to be honest. Andy Serkis narrating The Lord of the Rings, really, really good.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll get onto that more when we actually talk about The Lord of the Rings. But yeah. He also narrated The Silmarillion. So I listened to the audiobook of Lord of the Rings up until they reach Rivendell, you know, up until like the end of book one of Fellowship of the Rings, because there's actually six books in The Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
And each book that you buy as a, you know, Audible credit or something is actually two books.
Yes.
So there's The Ring Sets Out and The Ring Goes South or whatever it is. And those are the first two kind of books within The Fellowship of the Rings.
Ah,
so there's even books within books within books here. The version that I read when I was a kid, it was one volume. And you can still get one volume Lord of the Rings.
Okay, which includes The Fellowship.
Fellowship of the Lord of the Rings, Two Towers, and The Return of the King. Yeah. All collected into one big chunky book.
Yeah.
Audible, of course, splits them up into three for the purposes of credits. So anyway,
So you read up to then to Rivendell point,
and I realized then coming up now is the Council of Elrond, where they go back into the backstory of the rings. They go into the backstory of the, you know, the Numenor. They go into the backstory of Sauron.
Yes,
they go into
true.
The backstory.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All this kind of backstory kind of stuff. And I realized that as I was reading up to that point and they're mentioning different bits and pieces, I was like, I'm just going to have to read The Silmarillion with, and again, I had no expectations that I would ever read it. This is one of those books. The Silmarillion is one of those books which is so big. Well, it's not even big and chunky. I mean, there's quite a lot of material there.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where I'm like, why would I ever bother reading, like Moby Dick, which then I actually read and things. But, you know, it's one of those things where I'm just like, of course I'm not going to, you know, why would, like, and then I'm like, well, I'll actually just get to it, you know.
Okay.
Why not just get to it?
So you abandoned the Lord of the Rings.
No, I didn't abandon it. I paused.
Okay.
I paused the Lord of the Rings.
Right.
And I was like, now, because I want the grounding of my enjoyment of this, not of the story, not just to be based in the books rather than the movies, but I realized I want the pictures in my head and the history of the people and what's going on to be grounded now in not my memories of the book that I read 30 years ago, not the memories of a movie that I watched 3 months ago, but in like, what did J.R.R. Tolkien himself think the history should be and look like?
Yeah, so you wanted to go to the source material of all the background
and
here's the thing. Middle Earth.
Yeah, but here's the thing. What is the source material? Because this is a collection of writing which Tolkien never finished.
The Silmarillion.
Yeah. It was never published in his lifetime.
Okay.
And it was edited to get together by his son, Christopher Tolkien, and published a few years
after
he died.
Oh, even more
meta. Yeah, so here's the thing. I was like, well, it's not even a real novel.
Yeah.
So why would I ever read something which is just someone's world-building notes and it's not a real novel?
Yeah.
So this was all in my head. And I was like, well, no, now I want to actually get it. But I still wasn't quite sure what this stuff was.
Mm.
And it isn't a novel, but actually, it turns out when you actually read it, and this is not what I'd read about, but I started, put it this way. Some of this stuff I'd only read about some stuff I knew about the Silmarillion, but mostly I went into it not knowing actually what the stuff was.
Right.
Except knowing that it's like notes and backstory and history and genealogies.
Yeah.
And so I went into it without any expectations of what it was or what I was getting.
Right. Also as an audiobook.
Also as an audiobook, read by Andy Serkis.
Okay.
In this case, he's not doing Ian McKellen impressions and yeah. Impressions of the actors playing the hobbits. And because in The Lord of the Rings, when they actually meet up with... I can't remember the names of it. Boromir, is it? Who's played by... I can't remember his name now. The guy who dies in all these movies. Anyway, he always plays Yorkshire. And so suddenly he's like there. And I was like, oh, Boromir. Yeah, yes, of course, the people from there. And
That's so good. And
when he does Merry and Pippin, he puts on the Scottish accent that they have in the movie. So and he's doing an Ian McKellen and Ian Holm impressions as he goes
very
through.
Very good.
Thankfully, he just comes up with his own voice for Frodo, which is a lot. Anyway. In the Silmarillion, he's not doing that. He's just doing a straight reading.
Okay. Right.
And in some cases, it's sort of clear that he thinks someone is a bad guy, is like a bad character, because he puts on a voice, which is obviously an evil person's voice, you know, kind of taken straight from the movie, kind of like, and now we are an evil person, you know.
Okay. That's funny.
And so I started listening to The Silmarillion.
Okay.
and I loved it. It was such a fantastic reading experience.
Nice.
And I think partly is because it was an audiobook,
yeah,
and I had to just let the names wash over me.
Okay.
Because a lot of the names are very similar, because Tolkien was a linguist and, yeah, you know, he was into myth,
like,
and
Eowyn
legends.
Like Eowyn and Arwen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Eowyn and Arwen and Fangolin and Faerwin and Faerwin and all of these names which are, like, similar, mm, and a lot of them. Mm. And when you hear a name for the first time, you don't know if this is going to be a super important character, like legendarily important, or if that's the one time their name is mentioned and they're never mentioned again because they were just a brother of another character. They were a brother of a nephew of another character who was the sister of someone who was
a
actually important.
A brother of a sister.
You know, no, honestly, yeah. Honestly, that's what it is. You get these genealogists are like, this and this person, and that was this, and this one, and this one. But this guy, his other son, went to do this. And then you move on, you're like, oh, was that important? And you realize, ah, okay. For the people in the world of Middle Earth, mm-hmm, like the elves who are reading this, and they go, oh yeah, of course, that guy. You know, it's sort of like these mentions of other characters who,
like, pop culture.
Yeah, at the time would have been pop,
right,
culture.
Yeah.
And it made me, and this is like this whole first section of this book, again, as someone who grew up reading the Bible, mm-hmm, this is just catnip to me because, yeah, it's like better Bible.
It sounds quite... I have the Bible here in German,
yeah,
and the Bible, unfortunately, starts with the Old Testament,
yeah,
which starts with, okay, this is this person, that, and then that,
no,
their
no,
story
it
is this.
It starts with the epic,
ooh,
shit. No, here's the thing. It starts with the epic shit, oh, of like...
I never got any further than 20 pages.
You've got floods at the start. You've got, like, you know, the start of the Bible is like the crazy shit. You've got talking snakes. You've got, like, fall of man. You've got, like, giants roaming the earth. You've,
okay,
got towers that are, like, going up into the heavens and reaching heaven. You've got, like, people splitting off and speaking lots of different tongues. You've got, like, say, floods. You've got Moses. You've got plagues. You've got, like, battles and stuff. And all of that's, like, front-loaded in the Bible.
Okay.
Later on, you're getting laws, and laws are not so interesting, you know, and you get, like, some other genealogies, and you get songs and whatever. But it starts off with the epic stuff. And what the Silmarillion is, it's sort of like, how about that epic stuff just keeps going?
Oh.
We don't get to the boring bit where a miracle is like, oh yeah, and then, like, Jesus' miracles is sort of like, oh yeah, and then the waves calmed down a bit and he fed some people and these people got healed. And I'm like, in the Old Testament, like, there's lightning coming down from the sky and, like, whole armors are being swept away and, like, floods and tornadoes and, like, frogs, like... What about the frogs? And in the New Testament, they're like, and Paul went here, and he went, and he was persecuted by the Romans. And I'm like, boring, boring. Give me the Old Testament. And what the Silmarillion is sort of like, how about the Old Testament? But we like
more.
Let's stick with that. Let's stick with that epic stuff.
Okay.
Stick with the epic stuff. And also, so instead of this all being men, we're going to have it be like elves, you know, and the elves are kind of like men but immortal and stuff. And also they're like, oh, you know, also get the gods, you know, so you get like the pantheon,
okay,
of the I can't remember all the names of these. You get the main god, and then you get the Valar, which are like the sub gods, which are like the angel level.
That's in the Silmarillion.
No, they're kind of like the, yeah, in the Silmarillion you get, yeah, the main god. I guess I could just read it up here. The music of Einur, Einundur. Anyway, so Eru is the one called the Iluvatar, the father of all. So he's like the main god, and then under him you get the Valar, the Valar, a group of eternal spirits or demiurges, and they all sing together and create the earth by singing together.
Ooh,
and,
nice.
And so they're kind of like the main main gods, but like one level below gods,
right?
Like, so those are the Zeus and the Jupiter and the, you know, the Hermes and all of those kind of people,
yeah.
And Melkor, which is the Satan of the book, and he's got various names like Satan has as,
yeah,
well. You get like the devil, Satan, Lucifer, all of those different kind of stuff going on. So you've got like the main antagonist there, who's the fallen, like,
so
the fallen angel.
It's basically Middle Earth's Bible.
Yeah, especially in this first section. This is like Genesis Old Testament, like super Old Testament stuff,
right,
of like what, like how is this, how is there any light, is there any trees yet, and like where did the men come from, and where did the elves come from, and where did the dwarves come from. Dwarves is like this side story where another god is like, hey, you made elves, and you say that there's going to be men in the future, like the second race, you know, who mm-hmm. are going to be there long term. I'm going to make my own, I'm going to make my race here as well. Elves. And they're like, you kind of messed up with the elves a bit. And they're like, no, they're really good. And they're like, they're a bit small and stupid. And they're like, no, look, they're really good. And someone else is like, well, if he has dwarves, I'm going to make my tree people. And it makes, and they're, obviously they're the Ents and stuff like that. And there's like, there's this really fun conversation between the person who made the Ents and the person who made the dwarves. And the dwarves are, he's like, well, the dwarves are going to just chop down all the trees because they're going to need those for the furnaces to do all their smithing and smelting and stuff. And the other person, the woman who's in charge of all the trees, well, I'm gonna make a race which protects all the trees. And they're like setting this up, like this long term battle into the future. You're like, all right, there's gonna be this epic battle, and they're gonna protect it, and there's gonna be Ents and Ent wives, and this is gonna be like this. And then the whole section ends with them saying, oh yeah, we're gonna protect the trees. And then the dwarf lord, like the god who makes the dwarves, is sort of like, well, they're still gonna need wood. And then that chapter just ends and it just moves on to the next book, and I'm like, oh, that's really good. And then the dwarves, this like generations, like eternal battle between the dwarves and the Ents of like the dwarves want wood and the Ents want to protect the wood, not mentioned again for the rest of the Silmarillion, because that was obviously a scene that Tolkien had written.
Yeah.
And he's all like, oh, that's a fun scene. And that was just in his notes.
That's it.
And that, yeah, and that was it.
You know what this feels like? This feels like Homer.
Yes. And again,
it feels like.
So this next
an
section.
An author putting together.
So this next bits section is also this. So it moves on. It moves on from like biblical creation-y kind of myth kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Into the next section, which is elves and the elves going around and doing different stuff. Yes. And this is very Iliad. This is very Odyssey.
Yeah.
Which again, Iliad is another book which I'm struggling to get through as an audiobook. I might just have to just get the translation and not listen to the audiobook.
Yeah.
But yes, now this is very like sailing here and doing this and battles here and all that kind of stuff. So this is, and also the gods are always in the background, or some of the more importanty, like powerful things are in the background.
Yeah.
Sometimes pulling strings, but at this point, mostly leaving.
They're just observing, letting them, like, you know.
Yeah,
letting...
and it's sort of like, oh, Melkor is over there, or Morgoth at this point. He's got a new name. Oh. And he's just hanging out in these, like this, and they're like putting him in prison, and he's coming out of prison, and you know, but it's always like the elves are just left there to like deal with him himself.
Mm.
And one of the elves make the Simarils, which are these like every gem in the earth has some amount of power.
Mm.
And one like high elf, whatever it is, makes these three special gems.
Like the rings, yes, and then the special
like,
rings.
It's the MacGuffin. It's the MacGuffin, which was the idea of the Simarils was obviously there before the rings were in Tolkien's mind.
Yeah.
Like the rings are like a knockoff of the Simarils.
Yeah.
Of like, what are we going to do about these like three jewels?
Yeah.
And it's really good fun that Morgoth gets them and puts them in his crown, and then a lot of the rest of the book is like, fuck, that guy is really like really powerful up there, and we need to get those Simarils back. We need to, you know,
and destroy them.
And a lot of this is then the Silmarillion. It's like the middle section of the book is called the Silmarillion Quinta, I think it is.
Okay.
The Quinta Silmarillion. And this is like the this first age, which is elves versus Melkor Morgoth kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all that Silmarillion stuff. And then you get the bit after that, which is like then you're coming into the second age, which is like the men who are descended, like some half-elf men who are descended, and they're the Numenor. And then I'm like, oh, right, now this really explains a lot more about who Aragorn is and all of that kind of stuff. And like, what's Minas Tirith down here? And you're like getting all these names which sound very familiar to you, and that's really catching up a bit. And then the last section of the Silmarillion is the Rings of Power, which then goes kind of like all these stories are kind of overlapping with each other at the end here as well.
Yeah.
And that's kind of filled in a bit where the rings come from and what goes on, and that kind of fills in a bit of that. So
I mean, coming back, I mean, I'm going to come back to the movies, watching all the extra footage and the explanation making of and stuff, they did particularly say that they did get inspirations and bits and pieces from The Silmarillion for the movies to make sense in a movie format.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
they like had to kind of get this. And because it was available, all this stuff, you know, it's great to like to be able to have a story that you want to tell and then be able to tap into literally the brain and the behind the scenes and the why and when.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
So now, of course, I understand a lot more watching the movie, which is sort of like, oh, when they go to this, like, there's a waterfall with these big statues on the side of it. It's like, well, I know who those kings, I know what this is about. You know, I know what it is. And I was sort of like, oh, why is this, like, next to Minas Tirith, there's like, on the river, there's like another city, but it's kind of abandoned, broken down. And then there's this other tower across the other side. I was sort of like, oh, this is like way more clear. Of course, this is also explained in the, you know, Council of Elrond and these other bits, like it's explained within The Lord of the Rings, the novel, but you don't get like this deeper history of it.
Yeah.
So let me go over to my notes here as well. Okay, so here's the thing.
Yeah.
I got to the end of this book.
Yes.
And I was like, this is really amazing. There's so much good stuff in here as well. However, oh no, what's my notes here as well? Oh yeah. So what it became very clear to me is as I was reading this book, so not even at the end of this, but as I was going through, I was like, this is definitely Bilbo Baggins has edited this together and he's made a single narrative out of all the stuff that he found libraries.
So the book, The Silmarillion, has all the past stories and all the archival stuff.
Yeah.
And the person, the archivist,
and here
again,
it is.
Okay.
So...
Yeah.
And that is Christopher Tolkien. I was like, oh, Christopher Tolkien has took on the role of Bilbo / Frodo Baggins to collect together all his father's stuff, write some material, like fix continuity errors, and like edit together someone's life work of stuff. And the only reason he bothered to do that was that Lord of the Rings was like the biggest, one of the biggest selling books of all time.
Makes sense.
And lots of people lots of people would really care about this. And there would be a mass market for here is, you know, Tolkien died 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And now here's more stuff.
Yeah.
And it is amazing that someone could put in the time and effort into this. And I think, again, I don't care about what other people think about this project, like if they think it's good or bad, but I am so thankful that Christopher Tolkien is a good editor to the point where I wish he could have edited The Lord of the Rings, the novel.
Ah, I see.
Because I think he would have realized that within the novel, again, this is only listening to like the first half of the first book or like the first 1/6 of The Lord of the Rings novel.
Yeah.
I kind of wish that Christopher Tolkien had gone in there and edited that.
Right.
And like taken out Tom Bombadil, because you just realize, Tom Bombadil is in the novel. You don't know him because he's not in the movie.
No, never heard that name before.
No. And he just shouldn't be in the... It's like a massive... It's sort of like, what's Tom... And I'll talk about this more because, oh my God, Tom Bombadil in the audiobook is like the most annoying thing ever. Holy shit.
But that comes when we talk about the Lord of the Rings books.
Yeah, well, I'll get to that. I'm not sure if I want to do one episode for each of the three novels or if I just want to do one episode covering the whole Lord of the Rings because it is one... It was written as... Either way, I'll think about it.
Yeah.
But I kind of wish that Christopher Tolkien had gone through, like, having read all of his father's stuff.
Yeah.
And also read the first draft of Lord of the Rings. Of course, at the time, he was probably, like, you know, 10 years old. I don't even know. But I wish somebody like Christopher Tolkien could look at somebody's bigger work and go, right, this needs to be shortened up. This, we need to remove that. Put in a bit more explanation there. This doesn't make sense. There's a plot hole here.
Yeah.
And it's really incredible to read somebody going through somebody's own material and taking out all of the plot holes and taking out all the inconsistencies up to the certain level where it still feels like the Bible, which was written by one person. This was edited together. There was maybe some like oral tradition there, but other people, like, they had the laws and they needed to like explain where the laws came from, but they wanted the laws to be real, but they didn't want this, you know. And you realize that this,
it's like, a patchwork.
The Bible is such a patchwork. Mm. And what I really love about the Bible now is reading about people getting to like getting in behind and doing the historical criticism, literary criticism, and archaeology, and matching things up with the real archaeology of the world, and going, well, nothing before this moment makes sense, and nothing of, like, the only thing we ever have is this propaganda, which parts of the Bible were written, you know, and these,
of course,
this person, scholar was writing against this person, and this person was trying to back up their side, and this, and you realize that it's like the Bible is such a mess and is so confusing and has massive contradictions all the way through. And I'm never interested in the people trying to explain away the contradictions in the Bible.
Oh, and just take them on face value.
Yeah, either taking them away or explaining them away. Yeah. The explanation for all the contradictions and what the plot holes in the Bible and why things don't make sense and this is banned there, but then this person does it. It's just because, it's just a mismatch. And people were just making stuff up and writing it down. Mm-hmm. Everything is just somebody making something up and writing it down. And then somebody else looking at that and going, I don't like it that way. I'm going to just change it around. Not because there's any oral tradition, not because that was history. It's just because I want my Jesus to have done something slightly different. You know, it's like every superhero movie just comes out and it's sort of like, okay, so what is Spider-Man's origin story? You know?
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter. Like, there were some facts which all Spider-Man origin story movies will have in common. Mm-hmm. But even then, you'll get into the Spider-Verse and it's Miles Morales as Spider-Man. And you're like, wait a second, what are you even in this place, you know?
Yeah.
And so...
But it's a story in the core.
In the book, The Silmarillion, there's all these parts where they go, and then there were many tales told about this person. And other times I was saying, and this person went off and there's no tales told about that person. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, some say this happened because of this, but others like... And I'm like, okay, is that bit written by Tolkien, imagining that this is a text within the world of within the world that's actually written about in the text? Or is this Christopher Tolkien realizing there's four different versions, like, over the time his father made four drafts of this one story and he's had to like edit them together to make them make sense?
Yeah.
And apparently other bits he just had to write, sort of like, oh yeah, there's like this, I can't remember what it says,
some
here.
Fragments.
Yeah, it says Christopher Tolkien selected and edited materials to tell the story from start to end. In a few cases, this meant he had to devise completely new material within the tenor of his father's thought to resolve gaps and inconsistencies in the narrative, particularly chapter 22 of The Ruin of Doriath. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, I want Christopher Tolkien to do the same work on the Bible. Like, take out all the boring... Like, and lots of people have done this with the Bible. It's sort of like, well, let's just take it down to the main stories in any, like, movie version of any of the parts of the Bible. Because you realize that even like when you read the flood story, there's not one flood. You know, some of the times it's flooded because it's raining a lot. Other time, like, there's obviously different flood stories edited together into one thing.
Yeah, and in real life, they are out there. There are different kinds of floods all over the place, depending where you are and when you are. And so,
this book is someone going, right, it's Tolkien saying, right, we need there to be, you know, we need to be there a Thor and a Jupiter. There needs to be a flood. There needs to be a Romeo and Juliet. There needs to be an Oedipus. There needs to be a Jesus. And there needs to be another Jesus. And in fact, there's like Jesus.
And an evil person.
There's Jesuses all the way through this as well. Yeah, there needs to be a fall of man. And there's also a fall of elves. And there's a fall of man. You know, there's a Lucifer and a demon and the Sauron and the Morgoth and all of these different... Like, it's great. It's all of the stuff that you want from myth. It's all of the adventure that you want from an Odyssey. Mm-hmm. It's all of the genealogies that you want if you want, the world to feel lived in. And this is the thing that I kind of dislike. Once a franchise or a property or anything like that gets big enough and goes on long enough, there's actually more connections made, which makes the world feel smaller. And you notice this when Star Wars starts out, you know, there's this guy over here and he's Darth Vader, and then there's also the Emperor, and then there's also these generals, and then there's also the Force, and there's this, and then everything's all spread out, and there's people coming from there, people coming from there, people coming from there, and you're like, oh, all of these people have different histories. And then you go, well, actually, that person's father, this person's more important, the generals, you don't see them anymore, Darth Vader takes over, oh, and then their brother and sister, and then in the things that are
it
like...
It shrinks. It really shrinks.
Yeah, and then and everything gets shrunk down into itself. Like, well, it's all just comes down to this one guy. And in the final, in that, you know, 9 movies later and extended movies later, in the solo, they're going, oh, so Chewbacca was from there and this part, and you're like, oh. And everything just gets, as you make more connections to make the world more meaningful and to make people within the stories more important, everything gets smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
And what I like about this Silmarillion is that it doesn't do that. It's just, you're just chucking loads of stuff at it. Mm-hmm. And the world, every new name that gets introduced makes the world feel bigger and bigger and bigger.
As it is.
Yeah.
Like, as that's the experience of a single person in a world is has to be infinitely big.
Yeah.
Even if in the past, very far past,
yeah,
maybe we all just, you know, originate from the same 2 people, yeah, whatever.
But that's not how we
experience the world, is it?
Yeah. So there are recurring characters. Like they talk about, they keep coming mentioning Galadriel and Elrond, and I'm like, hey, there they are. Mm. I know them from the books. And they explain why they're there. So what I really enjoyed in this book is that, yeah, Christopher Tolkien is Bilbo. And then, of course, I actually read on, this is obviously not an original thought. I mean, it was original to me as I was reading it.
Yes.
But in the end, it's sort of like, yeah. Scholars have noted that Tolkien intended the work to be a mythology penned by many hands and redacted by a fictional editor, whether Elfwain or Bilbo Baggins. As such, Gurgly Nagy considered the fact that the work has indeed been edited actually realizes Tolkien's intention.
Yeah.
And it's kind of annoying that I went into this book not knowing that. Well, no, I think it's good that I got the enjoyment of coming to this realization by myself, having very specifically not read the Wikipedia page about the Silmarillion going into it, just knowing that it was some stuff.
Yes.
And not knowing that it was that stuff. And I had the joyful experience of discovering all of the stuff new, fresh.
Yeah.
Which, again, this is the, like, talking about spoilers, this is what I'm now like not allowing other people who've listened to this. But again, this is how I read this is how I do review books. It's always response criticism that I'm doing. It's sort of like, as I go through the book, what am I thinking and feeling?
Yeah.
And what knowledge do I know at any point? That's why I like to go into books with as few spoilers as possible, as fresh as possible. And I'm like, I wish I could have this experience with the Bible or the Odyssey. But I've never had that experience because all these works are so big and so well known that it's kind of impossible to read them fresh with new eyes or ears or whatever.
Yes, I understand.
You don't get to experience something for the first time a second time.
No.
And I really enjoyed...
You get to experience different things.
And here's the thing. Yeah. This book, if I just press play at the start of this book, audiobook, I wouldn't have been able to have that experience. And you know why?
Why?
Because there's a foreword by Christopher Tolkien.
Aha.
A preface, whatever.
Yeah.
And then there's another one because there was another edition of this. So there was one from the 70s and another one from the 90s or 2000s.
Yeah.
And then there's an hour and a half long, in the audiobook, letter from Tolkien to his editor explaining all of his thought processes behind this book. You know, he's trying to get this published and they're like, oh, what have you got? Well, I've written The Hobbit. And his editor's like, give me more Hobbit. Uh-huh. And he's all like, yeah, but I've got all this other stuff. And what it is J.R. Tolkien writing a letter to his editor explaining all of his thought processes behind this book and laying out all of the events and all of the legends and everything that's going to happen.
Oh, no.
This book is insane. That it's like reading The Lord of the Rings, but before you read Lord of the Rings, well, no, not even Lord of the Rings, because it's kind of known because it's a book. Just imagine reading a book, and before the book, like maybe a 15-hour audiobook, someone writes a full summary of the book that you're going to read, giving away the time span, what's going to happen, the characters, the main themes of the book, just laying it all out there, and then saying, yeah, in the end, it turns out he can see dead people and the person was dead all along. And now enjoy this story. And you're like, and honestly, because I listened to this, I went, after I finished the Silmarillion, the main text, I went back and listened to the preface and the second preface and this letter from Tolkien. And I was like, this is insane. This is unkind. This is like awful that people don't get to have the experience that I just had of discovering this new world for new again.
Because the publisher decided to put all this up front.
Well, I think it was Christopher Tolkien in the second edition decided, we found this letter and it's really good because it kind of explains the thought process behind all this stuff.
Yeah, but we can put that behind the book. Yeah, no?
That should have been at the end.
Yes.
Like, I didn't actually mind Christopher Tolkien explaining his, like, process of editing. Because he's all like, here's what I had to do. It took a long time and I had to come up with new stuff. That's fine. That's fine, actually. Yeah. I would have been fine if it was just the preface and the second preface. Am I saying that right? Preface? Preface?
I don't know.
I think it's one of those words that you can preface something, and this is a preface. It's that, I think
probably.
It's that.
Yeah,
that's what I'm getting confused around. So, this kind of stuff, I'm so glad I didn't read the Wikipedia page, and I'm so glad I didn't read Tolkien explaining all of the. But, like, literally going, like, and now in this chapter we'll talk about this, and this chapter we'll talk about this, and this chapter, this will be in this chapter, and then it's this and this. And I'm like, it's just awful. To the point where, as I was reading the book, I was like, oh, right, yeah, I recognize that name. Oh, I recognize that person. Well, if they're there, and I was listening to the audiobook, so I didn't have the map.
Yeah.
I didn't have any maps in my head.
Yeah.
And I was
That's one of the questions I was about to ask you.
What's your question about the map?
Well, because I do know that part of the Middle Earth world are extensive maps. There's like a visual aid helping you find your way around this world, because he didn't just come up with something in his head. Like, there were visual outlines. So I was wanting to ask you why your choice of audiobook and not getting a physical book or an ebook or whatever.
Well, the audiobook is just because I know I'll get through it quicker rather than an ebook.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to read an ebook. And also, I'd already listened to part of The Lord of the Rings as an audiobook.
Yeah.
And I liked Andy Serkis so much as a narrator. I'm like, I want this
That's
guy to
a
read.
Good experience.
Like, if this guy can read everything to me from now on. And turns out Andy Serkis, award winning, amazing actor.
For a reason.
Really good actor. Yeah. Really good at reading stuff. Who would have thought? Yeah. Anyway, so here's my full map story coming into this. I'm like, I can recognize it. And they're talking about a river going north or south and a wood and some mountains. And some of the mountains I recognize. Oh, Blue Mountains. All right, okay. So, is it the Grey Mountains? I can't remember. So I was like, all right, I recognize them. And then as I was going through, I was like, I'm struggling a bit here because I can't quite picture the map of Middle Earth that everybody knows from The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and those things. I'm like, I know this is backstory and I know this is myth and I know this is long distance stuff. And they're talking about, there's a tree there and a tree there. And I was like, I know that's over on the Western Isles or on the Western, the New World, across the sea to the west.
Yeah.
Talk about this inland sea, and I'm like, that must be the inland sea down at the bottom, down at there, and there's a river that comes out. I was like, working on. And then they say, and then the people come from the mountains, the Blue Mountains that are in the, I can't remember, they're all the way over there in the east. And I'm like, no, they're not, they're in the west. And I was getting confused about this. Anyway, so I was in Berlin, I was doing some Christmas, birthday planning stuff, and I had to go shopping. So I went into the bookstore, another country bookstore. Oh, I was taking a book back, the Neverness book that I had borrowed. So I was taking that back to the shop, and I was like, I'm just going to go down and check to see if there's a paper copy down here in the bookshop.
Of the Silmarillion.
Of the Silmarillion, so I can, just so I can have the name, if I can look up where we are just to see the names and maps.
Yeah.
And I was looking, and I was like, maps? And I was like, right, not quite. So they didn't have one. They had all of the Lord of the Rings, there's three different books, and they had a combined volume of Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
But they didn't have it, and they had The Hobbit, didn't have The Silmarillion.
Okay.
And so I went over to the other bookshop, I went from another country to Otherland, which are the two English bookshops, which have science fiction around the corner from each other. And I went there, and they had a Silmarillion, and I was like, €14. I was like, I've already just bought the audiobook. Tell you what, I'll just have a look at the maps. So I went through and I took some photos with my camera just out of the maps. There's a map in the middle and there's a few maps at the end. And then I started, and I was carrying on and I was like, so I looked and I got on my phone and I was looking through these images on my phone. And I was like, I'm not quite seeing how this overlays. I was looking at it, not quite. And I was really confused about where stuff is happening in the Silmarillion because of this map. I was like, I can see now on this map And so then I was like, but the mountains are like in the wrong place. And I was like, it's upside down. I was like turning upside down. No, it doesn't work that way around. I was turning up. But of course, the maps in the Silmarillion are just where the action's happening in the Silmarillion. And it doesn't have a larger context of like how the maps overlaps. So I was like, all right, let's go to Reddit. And I was like, Silmarillion map, where does it actually line up? And people are like, oh yeah, here it is. The mountains on this side of the map here...
Are the same mountains on
this side of the map there.
Right. So it's like, again, a patchwork of maps.
Yeah, so there's so I looked at these other people who've done a patchwork of maps, and I was like, yeah, but that doesn't make sense because all of that's just the sea, that's just the ocean out there. And then it dawned on me, and I was like, oh, this is like England before the ice age and before the ice melted.
Right.
And then
it was attached.
Stuff was attached to the mainland, and then it gets separated from that, and it becomes these little islands off the coast there.
Right. Yeah.
And also, it's like Atlantis, you know, that kind of thing. And I was like, oh, so we've got this Albion/Avalon/ you know, Western Isle Atlantis thing going on here as well.
Okay.
And of course, later on in the book, that's exactly what happens. They're like, the gods come in and are like, fuck this. And there's like, oh, it's all flooded. And there's a bit like
that. It disappears.
Bit more fall of man kind of stuff. More flood legends. And I was like, oh, so this whole area here that everything in this book is, or like everything in this Quintus Silmarillion, that's all going to be flooded except for the tops of these few mountains here. And I was like,
so where there's water, on this map, there once was.
Yeah, this river comes
right,
down.
Okay,
and yeah,
that
and
makes
and
sense.
The mouth of the river is just in a different place. And I was like, oh, that explains that bay. And I was like, this other map later on. So again, this is the kind of thing, going into Silmarillion, not knowing that all of this is happening on fucking Atlantis or Avalon or... And even at the end of the book, it's being connected back. Because here's the big project that Tolkien had, was that... He even says this in this letter to his editor. He's like... England doesn't have an epic. We've got sort of like a bit of a Beowulf and we've got some other stuff, but it's all Christian. And even though he was a Christian, it's like, it's too explicitly Christian. You can't have like this separation of like thought process if you're literally our legends are Arthurian and we're looking for a Holy Grail and going on. So like Holy Grails, and we don't want that. Like, what's that weird shit behind it? Like, I want like some like proper like pantheon of gods legends that we don't have in the English language, Celtic stuff. Yeah, they've got like swoopy gods, and we had the Norse gods come over, but we don't have any of our own legends. And what I want to do is create these legends for us, for English language legends that, like, if you go back and as you actually go through this, you realize, as it gets closer to the modern day, you realize, a lot of these names are like, you know, a bit more Avalon, a bit more Albion, a bit like Britain, and, you know, a few more bits and pieces, like really slight hints.
Yes, they become they go away from like the Norse Celtic roots to more like the elegant Roman-ish, you know, like with the columns and the flowy wardrobe and stuff.
So the idea being that if there's like a massive apocalypse or whatever happens, and then you like there's no people left in, or only a few people left in England or in the UK and those, you know, British Isles or whatever, and then 1,000 years later people come back, like the Lord of the Rings or the Silmarillion text could be like now we're just in the same world, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
There's space for all that to be there.
Yeah.
So this really brought to mind the Cortex podcast that I listened to with CGP Grey, who's, again, made lots of videos about Lord of the Rings and talked about this. He said that one of the aims of Tolkien was to create a mythology for England.
Yeah.
And he kind of... This is what CGP Grey said. He kind of succeeded beyond his wildest dreams.
Absolutely.
And I think he didn't. I think he actually accidentally created a mythology, not for England, because he was like, I want it to be very English. I want it to be like not Welsh and like not Scottish, because they have other bits and pieces. I want it to be very English, to be like at the same level as the Arthurian legend. Mm. And he did that. Mm. But also he's created this legend, these myths, which are actually for more than England. Like, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I see what
he
you mean.
He didn't actually succeed in creating a myth. Well, no, let me say separate from. I wouldn't say more for that. I'd say aside from that, he didn't create a new myth for England. Because I think that myth is still, you know, Romans, King Arthur,
yes,
you know,
yeah,
all the legends and myths that we already have there. What he created was legends and myths and frameworks which went on to be the foundation of fantasy, which is our modern myths. You know, our, like, the new myths, the new stories that we tell each other about our great past, our, like, it was better in the old days past, are these fantasy novels, which this becomes the foundational layer beneath all of that kind of stuff.
Yes.
You know,
definitely like the ground, laying groundworks for this huge industry now, for this huge
I don't want to be as crass as talking about the industry.
No, I'm not.
What I want to say is now, when we close our eyes, us in the modern day, and we think what it would have been like to be in the old days, do we think we're knights and we're going on grail adventures? Because the movies that were being made in the 1950s, like before Lord of the Rings was done, as soon as you close your eyes, everything is like knights. Everything is, you know, Connecticut, Yankee and King Arthur's court. Now, when we close our eyes and think about the old days, there might be knights, but actually what we're thinking of is Aragorn and Strider. And we're like, when you close your eyes, it's all people going on these quests. But all of the quests that people go on now are Lord of the Rings quests. They're not Grail quests. And this is me being like very picky about what the difference is there. But what he actually managed to do was remove the imagery and the iconography of like medieval Europe and Viking-y kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of separated that away from the Christianity roots of all of that.
Like, okay.
Do you understand what I'm trying to say? Maybe not. Maybe I'm trying to like make a distinction here, which is like, he didn't replace Arthurian legend and he didn't create something new for England.
Yeah.
What he did was like lay the foundations of other myths, which are kind of like more universal and more important than that.
Yes.
By not tying it to England too much.
Yeah.
He created something more. And again, the Silmarillion is part of that. The Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit are even bigger part of that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's difficult for me to explain what I'm trying to get at here. That there's more going on here than him just going, oh, I want to create new myths for England.
Yeah.
Like, sure, you didn't but do also, that, but you succeeded in like on a different dimension.
Yeah. And I think where his really, really, really big achievement comes from is from his profession, like his expertise in language, in how humans communicate and how they tell stories. I think that, because he has such big knowledge about that, he was able to take this and abstract it away a bit from...
That is only one small part. And I've heard this stuff people talk about, oh yeah, and he was a linguist and he did all this kind of stuff. And I just listened to somebody reading that to me. So maybe, you know, because I didn't see all the spellings of all of it.
Yeah.
I honestly think that's shortchanging the genius of Tolkien and Christopher Tolkien, like J.R.R. Tolkien and Christopher Tolkien, this team who've come up with this, of course it wasn't a team, but like, you know what I mean? All the work that's been gone into this, I think, oh yeah, and he just came up with a new language. Like, yeah.
No, that's not what I said.
No.
And I don't, that's kind of like
what I'm
really
trying to say is, this is, no matter what he did with all the language and the names and the words and the linguist and all that kind of stuff, I think that's maybe 5% of what makes this good. Like, it's just really good storytelling. I think the character writing is amazing. And I know people will get there's too many characters and there's too many names and all that kind of stuff. But the thematic stuff that he's doing in the Silmarillion, it's like, it's biblical and it's Homeric, and it's all of this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and the linguistic part of it, and
I include that in the linguistic part.
What? It isn't. It's a different thing.
Okay.
And Tolkien, in his letters to the editor, literally says this. He says, "My interest in myth and legend and storytelling and coming up with stories to tell my kids."
Yeah.
Like, That was one part of it. And then he's sort of like, oh, yeah, and this stuff that I'm doing over here with linguistics, oh, I can combine the two. And I think that him saying he's combining the two is like the mythical stuff that he's doing. It's like, it's better than like it's the same kind of thing that happens with in Moby Dick, where he's sort of like, and now myth here and white stuff and, you know, legends stuff. Here and all, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Is there is a cleverness to it, which sure, the linguistic stuff gives a bit more richness to that. But at the foundation of it, that is there because he started writing this stuff in like, you know, 1911. Mm-hmm. And he was writing it up until 1970s. This is like 50 to 60 years worth of work and thought into this.
Yeah.
And that he came up with like root words or sounding linguistic-y kind of sounding stuff, I think it's just a small part of it.
Yeah. I think for some reason in my head, a linguist isn't just a person that deals with language and sounds and origins of language, but ingrained in the study of language and linguistics and in what language is.
Yeah.
Ingrained in that is an understanding of how humans use language to communicate and to create stories.
Okay,
so the idea of like him being knowledgeable in storytelling, story writing, story communication is in my head a huge part of
But he thought of those as two separate things for a long time. And maybe I'm just reacting to whenever I've heard people say, oh, Tolkien was a linguist and so all of the words make sense and they have roots and all that kind of stuff. I think maybe that's my misunderstanding of their point.
Yeah.
And my misunderstanding is that I have a much more narrow focus of that. And I was like, well, yeah, anyone can come up with that kind of... But it isn't about that. It's more than just names for stuff and root words. And
I understand.
The elves' names sound like this and the Numenor names sound like that and these other ones sound like this. I think that's a bit of a flex by him, but I think other authors other people could do that, come up with languages, but I think his deep understanding of the myths and what makes something mythic and what makes something historic, what like the difference between a myth, and he even says this in his letter to the editor, he's sort of like, some of these are fairy tales, some of these are myths, some of these are legends, some of these are histories, and some of these are action adventure stories, and you're like, oh, that's what I know that's what he does in Lord of the Rings, because it starts off and it's sort of like, yes, it feels very hobbity and it's very adventure-y, and by the end you're like, wow, this is very epic and you know whatever, and so I know he can do all of those, and I think it's the mixing, like every time that you start a new chapter in the Silmarillion or every time that you start a new sentence, sometimes you don't know what level you're going to be zoomed in or out of this, and that takes a crazy amount of confidence and skill, and in Christopher Tolkien, the editor, editing that together, to not try to go, we need to pad out some details here, or, well, this story is running a bit long, we need to tighten it up a bit.
Yeah. Anytime I think of an author, or I read a book by an author, and this is one of the things that I wanted to get out of Peter F. Hamilton when we talked to him.
Yeah.
My understanding of how a writer approaches a book, in my opinion, should always be like
this.
I know it can't be.
And the reason it can't be is because Tolkien published 2 books in his lifetime.
I understand that. However, it's like this understanding of my thinking that if there's an author, they need to understand their world as deeply and richly and complex, like it needs to be as like complex as if it doesn't happen in our world, in our existing thing, you have to come up with why stuff happens, so how people telling stories to each other.
But
like,
I think that's what makes Lord
rich.
Of the, I think that's what makes Lord of the Rings so why it's so engaging, and why people, it can, their hobby can be reading Lord of the Rings, and rereading it and reading the extra stuff and reading all 4 different
and
versions
acting it out and
all,
you know,
4 all versions of Beren and Luthien, Beren and Luthien, like there's these sub stories, Beren and Luthien, and there's really fun sub stories within this, like almost like novella length subs, like sections in this book where you're like, oh right, so this next chapter we're just following a lot, or these next 2 chapters we're just following along with this one character, these two characters. So makes you do sense. Get that, you know, a yeah. bit like some of those Bible books where you're like, all right, so now we're just doing...
We just focus on these two.
Yeah.
Yeah, makes
but
sense.
More extended than that, you yeah. know, and more kind of satisfying nice. In some ways. Yes, so what I wanted to say was, let me
the
get
Silmarillion.
Down to...
Are you going to give it a rating?
5 stars. I copied this out from... I looked at some other ratings and reviews from the Goodreads. Mm. And the Scribbling Man, who is a friend of mine on Goodreads, maybe an SFBAP listener, who knows? He says, as for me, while it's been 15 years since I made my only trek through those works, he's talking about The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings,
yeah.
reading The Silmarillion has been surprisingly enriching, and the cavernous gap in time has not kept the book from adding a new depth to my appreciation of Lord of the Rings. Mm. Aspects that I previously considered arbitrary or weak now have context, and I have a desire to reread the trilogy in a new light. Yeah. So this is a Scribbling Man coming back to this book. Again, yes. He says 15 years. For me, it's 30 years since I read Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And reading this book, 30 years after reading Lord of the Rings, I'm like, oh, right. And then I'm like, oh, right. And I'm like, oh, the map. Oh, there's all the kind of stuff.
Okay.
So, my rating is 5 stars, but this is only because I went into it not reading the Wikipedia page,
yeah.
not reading the letter from Tolkien,
yeah.
not knowing that the Wikipedia page says, in keeping with this idea, the Silmarillion was supposedly translated from Bilbo's 3 volumes, Translations from the Elvish, which he wrote while at Rivendell, you know. And I didn't know about the flood that... You know, there'd been like an Atlantis-like flood and all of the action was happening. Like, discovering that all for myself while reading
yeah.
was the 5-star reading experience that I wanted from
yes.
this book.
And also, reading it at this at this specific time when you had exposure to 30 years ago, reading Lord of the Rings,
yeah.
then watching the movies,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
then The Hobbits, then reading...
It's like this whole world.
Yeah.
And now, what I want to do... is not read anything else at all about the Silmarillion. I don't care about what anybody says. I read through again the introduction to part of this first section at the top of the Wikipedia page. I don't care at all what anybody else thinks about the Silmarillion.
Okay.
What anybody else's theories are, how the maps line up better or worse or anything like that. It was handy that somebody had made like a fan map of the Silmarillion where the action was like, oh, right, this is how big the world
yeah.
is. And, stuff. And I don't, like, I, it's all of that stuff. This reading experience was a 5-star reading experience for me in a way which I kind of tricked myself into just by like, oh, fuck it, I'll do the Silmarillion. Despite the Silmarillion being a book where I'm like, well, I'm never going to read that because I'm not interested in stuff. I'm not interested in stuff. And I realized, many authors will have stuff.
Yeah.
But not many authors have enough stuff, have 60 years worth of stuff, which then people care about so much that their son will spend 3 years and a team of editors. It said edited by... Christopher Tolkien and Guy Gabriel Kay, who's like a fantasy author.
Yeah, we read a book by him.
You have you?
We have.
Oh, we have?
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I read the
and
Guy Gabriel
really...
Kay, A Song for Arbonne.
And you really enjoyed
stars.
That one.
Yeah, I read it in 2014. Don't remember. I completely forgotten that I read anything by Guy Gabriel Kay.
Yeah.
Oh, I think one of his books is still in my Goodreads to read list, and it's been there probably since 2014. I've just not got around to reading it again. Forgot why I put it in there. Yeah, so what was I just saying? Yeah, like...
A team of people. So much stuff.
It's one of those people... Like, all authors will have... Or many authors will... No, actually, I'm...
That's what I'm saying.
Maybe not many authors have this much stuff.
Yeah.
That can then, like, disparate stuff written over 60 years, that can then be edited together. And even if it could be edited together, why would anyone edit together? Like, yeah. I don't even care about the novels that I wrote in, like, 2008 to 2010.
Yeah, but you're not an author. Like, no. I mean, you're not, like, a
but what
main...
I do... But what
job.
I do is go back through historical juggling stuff and edit together the, like, how did this trick develop over the years because it was first done by this person, then Francis. And I've made, like, 18-minute long videos, which are just a compilation of a single trick and how it's changed over the years and how different people have done it and performed it.
Yes.
And so I'm interested in that in sub, but again, most people don't get, like, there isn't a big market for that. And it's just amazing that this thing can exist, this artifact in the world, which to me now, I enjoyed reading so much because I've read the Bible and because I've read the Odyssey and because I've just read Moby Dick and I've read these other big works which are held up as great works. And but this is like better than them because it's like more modern and like, I don't know, it's just like more mythical and more legendary and more action packed, you know?
Yeah. All the good stuff.
Yeah. But like at a different level, you know, in a way that I can enjoy, like it's all the stuff, it's like catnip for Luke.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's like Luke nip.
Yeah. Yeah.
but I didn't even know that because I just thought, oh yeah, it's some like, it's like behind the scenes
a
stuff.
Compilation,
you know,
of
yeah, I was expecting
notes.
I was expecting a compilation of stuff and like some genealogies and some maps or whatever. Yeah. And it isn't. It is actually what it is, what he set it out to be, which is more than just stuff. It is actually I don't even want to say it's the backstory or the prequel to The Lord of the Rings. It's the foundations that makes The Lord of the Rings so rich.
Yeah.
But also, it stands up on its own. However, it only has the weight to be worth reading because I watched some movies in a few months ago, and Lord of the Rings is such a big thing. So it's like this perfect storm of something written recently enough, which has the flavors of old and ancient, but isn't old and ancient. It's actually all 100% new.
Yeah.
But you still have like the, you know, the Zeus, and you still have the Oedipus, and you still have the Romeo and Juliet, and you still have all these like mythic and legendary figures.
The basic
stuff.
Human stories.
Yeah, you have these building blocks of myths and legends and action and adventure and cool stuff and dragons and, you know, Balrogs and vampires. And you're like, holy shit, it's all in here.
Yeah, that's fun.
Anyway, it's all good. But it's like this perfect storm of like, how did all these things come together to be this much fun? Yeah. However, if you're reading it and you have to read all those names by yourself, holy shit, no. Just listen to the audiobook.
Makes sense.
And somebody who's already learned the pronunciations and who can put a different spin on them so they don't sound all exactly the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get Andy Serkis just to read you the book. And oh my goodness, what a fun experience.
What a treat.
I really enjoyed this book.
Nice. That's
really enjoyed
good.
This book. And I can already tell this book is going to be higher rated than the Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Rings novel.
Okay.
And The Hobbit.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. And so now I'm going to really enjoy, there's a podcast episode that I need to get to, which is the Meal of Thorns episode on the Silmarillion.
Okay.
Which came out a month ago or something
like that. Oh, that's handy.
So now I'm going to listen to that and see if they say similar things or different things.
I thought you don't care about other people's opinions about this.
No, it's not. Yeah, that's true, actually.
I did.
Let me adjust that. That they did an episode on this podcast that I've started listening to. I mean, it's a recent podcast.
Yeah.
Was one of the impetus, that was some impetus for me to read this book.
Okay. Well, then it makes sense to go back and
listen to that podcast.
And then
what I'm trying to say is my theories of what's going on in this book and what it means and what the themes are and what the myths are and what they mean and what the, I don't know, like, you know, like what the, even the intention of the author is sort of like what his politics are, which are like, maybe not great, you know, it's sort of like early British, you know, professor politics. So it's going to be a bit weird compared to these days.
Of course.
Whatever. Like, all of that kind of stuff. Like, it's not that I don't care. I don't care enough to read anything else about this. Like, my opinions of this now are the opinions that I discovered reading the book without doing any research beforehand.
Yeah.
And I don't. And those are the ones that gave me 5-star reading enjoyment.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Okay. So, but then you will then head back to the Lord of the Rings.
I've already started listening. Yeah, I've just finished the Council of Elrond.
Okay.
And you know what?
Yeah.
There's a lot of that stuff. And I'm like, oh yeah, of course, all of this stuff. Because I just read the Silmarillion. I was like, I was like, why aren't people asking questions about this? Like, Bilbo has read this. Bilbo didn't. Like, anyway, it's quite funny going straight into the most history heavy part of the Lord of the Rings. But that's kind of why I wanted to read it then.
Yeah, it's a good point.
To get the Council of Elrond with the knowledge of what's gone on in the Silmarillion.
Makes sense. You know, I think in this podcast, it would be so funny to have a counter for stuff. I think the
stuff. No, here's the thing. Stuff. This isn't in most. Normally, I talk about stuff
Yeah.
And stuff like that. I'm always like me saying I'm stuff like that. When I listen back to these podcasts, I'm like, stop saying and stuff like that. It's like a vocal tick that I have.
Yeah.
Instead of going, I'll say and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But no, that's
but this one is actually stuff.
Tolkien called it stuff. So to finish up, the Wikipedia page says the Silmarillion, Tolkien.
It's clever
because is it J.R.R. Tolkien or is it edited by Christopher Tolkien? And when I enter this in, am I going to put J.R.R. Tolkien into it?
Just Tolkien.
I might just do what it says here and just say Tolkien, yeah. The Silmarillion. And
it's a family work.
It's a family work. Yeah. And of course, it'll be listed alongside The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings once I actually get to that. But I think this is just calling this Tolkien, The Silmarillion is probably
perfect.
What I want to do.
Awesome.
So, yeah, let's wrap it up there.
All right.
Oh, I did want to mention some of the images in my head was from a illustrated guide to Middle Earth that I read in the school library or at some point when I was, again, 15 or 16.
Yeah.
I'd read The Lord of the Rings and they didn't have the Silmarillion, but they had like an illustrated guide. So I knew that there was like some of the stuff was like I kind of knew what was some of the early stuff because I'd seen like illustrations of two trees and one was silver and one was red. And then there was got one gold tree and one silver tree. And those things had always been in my head, kind of.
Right.
And, you know, one of the trees, and then you see one of the trees fallen over on the next illustration. So I didn't want to say I'm going into it completely cold, but my memories of what happened in those early books were from an illustrated guide to Middle Earth that I read when I was like 14 or 13 or 15 or whatever it was.
Okay.
So I knew that was something to do with trees and there was darkness and then there was orbs and there was some boats with sails and stuff like that. And also they talk about these trees and I'm like, oh, we just watched the tree at the end of The Lord of the Rings. They have a wedding and there's a tree, you know, in the top of there, and there's a silver and there's like this new root that's coming out. That's all explained in the Silmarillion. And I was like, oh, the tree.
The tree.
Yeah. So it's fun to have those kind of things that like this, my reading journey of me like remembering, you know, these pictures of like trees in the, I don't know.
Will be difficult to find.
Yeah, again, now I'm typing in illustrated Silmarillion. Yeah, like these different trees that they have here.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
This tree and this tree here. Yeah. And when I watched the movies, I was like, what tree is that? And yeah, they are connected.
Important trees.
To be honest, the genealogy of the tree is as important as the genealogy of the elves or the genealogy
of the... Yeah, it's another species.
It's very specific. The genealogy of the tree is very specific.
Cool.
All right, then.
All right.
Let's wrap it up there. Yeah. Oh, I just want to mention here. Check this out. The first book of the year, Micaiah Johnson, Those Beyond the Wall, I gave it 0.5 stars.
Oh, yeah.
Since then, Earth Abides, 4.5 stars. Neverness, 4.5 stars. Terminal World, 4 stars. Alien Clay, 4.5 stars. And here, another 5 star. We are on the longest stretch of Luke is really enjoying reading at the moment for a long time.
That's
of course
nice.
It's because...
Yes, you're rereading
I'm
stuff.
I'm rereading stuff for the SFBRP must reads list. So yes, I am, of course, you know, waiting it for, you know, good stuff.
Yeah.
Roadside Picnic. The Sparrow, you know, these other books, Left Hand of Darkness. It's all like, yeah, I know
you
these are all 4 to 5
stuff.
Star books and I'm rereading them because they're 4 to 5 star books.
Yeah.
I'm like, can I keep up this streak?
That makes
sense. Is the Fellowship of the Rings, is that going to be 4.5 stars? But we won't know because Juliana is going away on Monday.
Yeah.
She is not energy. Juliana has MS.
Yeah.
Multiple sclerosis.
Yeah.
And that requires, at the moment, some rehab. So Juliana
totally
is going away
does.
For 4 weeks.
Yes.
Taking 4 weeks off work. It's not a holiday.
I take 4 weeks off of everything.
Everything. She's going to go to a rehab center to do physiotherapy and...
Psychotherapy. Oh, whatever.
And whatever. And be fed right and be weighed every morning and every evening. Actually, we don't know what's going to... I don't know what's going to happen. Anyway, Juliana's doing 4 weeks worth of rehab, which means I've got 2 weeks at home... by myself.
Yep.
Boo. I've then got a work gig. Yay. Then I come back from sailing across the Atlantic, which
and
is what I do.
I might come back or not. Well, let's see.
And then Juliana might have an extended rehab. What I'm trying to say is there may or may not be another SFBRP episode for
a bit.
Four to six weeks. Yes. I might do one, or I might put something else in the feed. Who knows if I reread something or do a fun thing. But I'm going to just keep going on with Lord of the Rings for the next few weeks. I've got three.
I downloaded a few books on my Kindle.
Yeah, I've got two and a half books of Lord of the Rings to get through.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe I'll reread The Hobbit and just do a big blast after 4 weeks. So yeah, that's our news, is that this might be the last episode for 4 to 6 weeks.
Well, let's see.
Hopefully Juliana comes out of this rehab with energy for the rest of the year.
Yes. That would be very much appreciated.
Right. That's it. Follow me on Goodreads. Become my friend. Head over to the SFBRP listener group on Goodreads. If you want me to read a book, or if you want something else to be added to the SFBRP must reads list, maybe I'll make a fantasy must reads list. But at the moment, it's just Lord of the Rings, Silmarillion, and Piranesi. Who knows?
Yeah. Let's see.
No, that's it. We have seen.
Okay. Well, we need to come to an end. You need to say...
This is
like,
the end.
Yes, okay.
Well, you say it.
Say the proper ending.
Oh, thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.